Monster Man, Episode 308, Award and Pachydermion.
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games.
In today's episode, we're continuing our journey through Creature Catalog, the 1986 supplement for basic Dungeons & Dragons. Before we do that, though, I wanted to take a minute to just do some state of the show catching up. If you are a regular listener, you may have noticed that over the last couple of weeks, the release schedule of the Patreon special episodes has gone down. Those are the episodes that are free to everyone, but that are requested by Patreon backers at the $5 level. If you're an even longer listener, you may recall that what's happened is that they have reverted to the original release schedule. So normally they came out every other week, and they were only on weeks that I didn't release an episode of Patron Deities, the special bonus podcast for my patrons. And because I had so many requests, and I'm very grateful for that, I shifted to a weekly release schedule. But for at least the time being, I'm going back to the every other week schedule, and that's for two reasons. The first is that, by my calculations, I have now made up the deficit, so I should be able to get all the bonus episodes done this year, even releasing them every other week. My problem was, one of those good problems, that if I release an episode every other week, then that means I can only do a maximum of 26 Patreon bonus episodes in a year, and I had more than 26 patrons at that level, which is a great problem to have, don't get me wrong. The second reason is that, as you can maybe hear, my voice is a little bit hoarse and buzzy at present, and this is something that I've been dealing with for a long time. You may actually remember it, I mean, going back into last year. You know, not to go into too much detail, but this is something that I am having looked at. I don't have COVID, I'm not in any danger, everything is fine, but I am trying to rest my voice a little bit more and not schedule too many activities where I talk a lot, which, you know, like my primary hobby, role-playing games, one right after the other, particularly when I have like other podcasts or other collaborative projects that I'm also working on. I'm trying to spread them out more evenly so that I don't have weeks where at the end of it I just can't talk. So I am going to try out a couple of different strategies for mitigating that. So there may be episodes where, you know, I write the script, but there's a guest host and things like that. This is all, like I say, this is going to be pretty minor, pretty experimental. You shouldn't really see any change in the show. But, you know, if there are changes or if there are episodes that seem a little bit unusual, I just wanted to explain why. Everything is fine. I am fine. I'm just trying to be more responsible about how I treat my voice, which, of course, as a gamer and a teacher and a podcaster is very important to me. Okay, so thank you for listening to that. Just wanted to make sure that everybody knew why these changes were happening. And, you know, there may not even really be any changes that you notice. But if you do, that's why. Now for the monsters. And I gotta say, this week's monsters are pretty great. This is a very creature catalog-y section. First, we have the Oward. The Oward, remember I said that basic has more kind of pulp, sword, and sorcery elements to it than advanced does, and that I was surprised by that fact? Well, here's a case in point. The Oward are time-traveling cyborgs from the future. Great. I love them. They have all kind of high-tech gadgetry, so they have like a laser gun and a force field. They have something that appears to be some kind of bazooka, and obviously all of this gear only works for the Oward. The PCs cannot mug some awards and take it, which is a bit of a shame. It actually says that you can cast a wish spell to get it to work, you know, 1d4 times. But, you know, once you're high enough level to be just kicking out wish spells, these are not the best ways for you to protect yourself or damage other people. Although they're still neat, of course. The Oward are the bad guys from a scenario that we have had cause to mention several times in the past. That is CM6, Where Chaos Reigns, the one that the Garl and the Hephaestion come from. And they are the villains in that scenario. They are specifically coming back in time to mess with the timeline so that their future comes into existence. They've discovered that there are some things that are going to cause their future not to be, and they want to make sure that that doesn't happen. So time travel, you know, we've talked before about time travel in fantasy games and how it sort of doesn't work very well because most fantasy games don't have the kind of detailed history or the kind of history, not even so much that it's not detailed, many fantasy games have excessively detailed histories, but that they don't have the kind of history that anybody cares about. If you're going to go back in time and meet Leonardo da Vinci or Joan of Arc or Abraham Lincoln or, you know, Marie Curie, those are all people that people really care about in a way that, like, if you say, oh, we're going to go back in time and meet Bigby, that's kind of neat, but it doesn't quite have the same oomph. There are settings where you could do it. So if you said, you know, in a Middle Earth game, oh, we're going to go back in time and we're going to go meet Beren and Luthien, that is the kind of thing that players would get excited about. But at the same time, I don't know that Middle Earth is the kind of setting where time travel is really part of what you could do in a game. You could do it in Glorantha, because Glorantha has the timeless realm of gods and heroes, so you really could meet, you know, Harmast Barefoot or Alicorning Dragonbreaker or whoever it is that you care about up there. There are time travel shenanigans in Glorantha for sure. Belantar Harshax was from the future, I seem to remember. Anyway, none of that is important. My point is simply that the Oard are therefore one of those monsters that kind of relies for their glamour on borrowing trappings from another genre. So they are very much like Doctor Who villains in their, like, shiny jumpsuits. And they rely on the fact that you kind of know what that means already, and that there's some enjoyable cognitive dissonance in the fact that you know it, but your character has to kind of affect not to know it. You know, that is an enjoyable contradiction. This is also one of those kind of very fantasy cliches where the Oard are from a future of high technology, and in order to create that high-tech future, they have to create a world where magic doesn't exist. That is my understanding anyway. I haven't read CM6. As I've mentioned before, boy, if I have to start collecting old modules, this is going to get to be a very expensive hobby. They're probably in PDF, actually, now that I think about it. It's going to be time-consuming anyway. But so, I never quite know how to deal with that in fantasy. I don't, you know, the opposition of science and magic, I guess, makes kind of thematic sense, but sort of stops making as much sense when you really think about it. Which I don't encourage you to do with the Oard. Just enjoy the, you know, silver lame jumpsuit time travelers from the future with their laser guns turning up in your Dungeons & Dragons game. These guys are wild. I said earlier that they might be the weirdest monsters in this book, but actually it's still the Reflector, which has the same weird time travel gimmick, but is much stranger and more enigmatic, whereas the Oard are much more obviously just pulp sci-fi villains. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Next up we have the Pachydermian. Now, I have said before that a lot of the humanoids in the humanoid section are some kind of animal people, and these are no exception. They are elephant folk. And they are fine. They're kind of exactly what you would expect from elephant people, in that they're sort of great warriors, but they're also wise sages, and specifically they are great lore keepers. They know a lot about history and about mythology, and you can go and find a Pachydermian and they will, like, tell you their great learning, but for a price. And they don't write anything down, because an elephant never forgets. They're known for the great memories. In combat, they wear this cool armor that is clearly based on, like, Mughal Indian elephant armor. If you've ever been to the Royal Armories in Leeds, there's a spectacular suit of elephant armor. Maybe more than one, but there's one that really I kind of remember seeing, and that I think I have a postcard of somewhere. And they really look lovely. They're sort of, you know, not just practical, but very, like, ornate and beautiful. They also fight with a weapon in each hand and then a mace held in their trunk, which is kind of a fun image. So those guys are pretty neat. I think the illustration really does a lot of giving them some character. And what I'd like to see is an illustration of, like, both Pachydermians. So they're Pachydermions. I keep saying Pachydermian because that feels like it makes sense. But Pachydermions. On the one hand, you have, like, this, some robed sage sitting in a temple, because they live in, like, big stone cities. And I think we're meant to think of, like, the monumental architecture of India here. Some sage sitting by a tranquil pool fringed with lotuses. And then, on the other hand, I guess all his little, like, Pachydermion disciples, you know, strapping his armor onto him so he can go out and whoop some player characters who've come to steal his knowledge. I can get into that. That seems like a pretty fun creature. They do a grip of damage, incidentally. They are pretty tough, you know, as purely conventional, like, weapon-swinging fighters. You wouldn't want to upset them. I mean, they're elephants. I guess the only thing that kind of is not that exciting about the Pachydermion is that it is sort of the first thing that would come to your mind when you think elephant man. So if someone said, what are the elephant people like? And you were like, they live in kind of like fantasy India, and they never forget, because elephants never forget, and I guess they could hit you with their trunk. Well, okay, great. There you go. I do think that here we're seeing an example of the creators being a little more aware of certain aspects of history. So I think that if you're a wargamer and maybe kind of a military history enthusiast, then the use of war elephants springs to mind as an obvious thing about elephants. I know there are elephant people in current Dungeons & Dragons, the Loxodons, and because of the name, I assume that they are pseudo-African elephants. Either way, these guys are okay, and I think they would be fun miniatures. You know, I do have some Elephant Man figures, but they're much more kind of like only a bit bigger than human scale, and they certainly don't have this cool ornate armor. So I'd actually love to see a neat miniature of the Pachydermian. Indeed, there's quite a lot of good... You know, there are a lot of monsters in here that are quite visually striking, and because they're relatively obscure in D&D terms, they're not the kinds of things that you find miniatures of very often. So maybe a fun little project there, try and make up some models. I mean, I could do a lot of them just kind of as kit bashes, but the Pachydermians might be a challenge. Yeah. Anyway, I like these guys okay. They're not as much fun as the Oart, but I definitely think that you could, you know, next time you have some regular old mountaintop sage that the players have to go and, like, learn about a prophecy from or whatever, you could zhuzh him up a little bit by making him a Pachydermion, and there's nothing wrong with that. All right, that's about all the monsters that we have time for today. In our next episode, we're going to be continuing our journey through the humanoid section of Creature Catalog. So please join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.